Welcome to the Florida Specifier Podcast. This is Brett Slivers, and I'm joined today by my co-hosts and fellow members of the Specifier Editorial Board. First, there's Jeff Littlejohn. He's with National Stormwater Trust, On-Site Performance, and he's also the senior advisor at the Adams & Reese Law Firm. Next, there's Patrick Gillespie. Patrick is the editor-in-chief of the Florida Specifier, as well as a government affairs advisor with the Adams & Reese Law Firm. And of course, there's Ryan Matthews. Ryan is a government affairs expert and practitioner with the Gray Robinson Law Firm. I am a partner at Anfield Consulting and a host of another podcast called Water for Fighting. Gentlemen and Ryan, it's great to be with you today.
I like that you use the word practitioner as sort of a kind way of calling me an attorney.
Right, exactly.
I liked expert. I thought that was creative.
I just like being included.
You're welcome. It's great to have you.
You don't look a day older than
happy birthday.
56 or whatever. So, happy birthday.
Thank you kindly. So this is kind of our official Marco episode of the podcast, right? And we talked about it a little bit before in the past, but I think the idea that it's the Marco episode is reflected in the July and August issue of our paper, the Florida Specifier. But before we dive into some kind of the fun and practical info related to the Environmental Permitting Summer School, I was hoping that Pat, as our editor-in-chief, could walk us through some of the biggest non-conference related pieces in the paper. My guess is that you'll probably want to start with your own on the front page, which has to do with the state's budget.
Sure. Yeah, thanks, Brett. So obviously, with the governor signing the budget late June, we wanted to make sure we got that into the paper. Obviously, focusing mostly on the environmental aspects of that, given the audience. But you know, there were quite a few vetoes. Obviously, a lot of those were specific member projects and other things that, you know, were really non-environmental related, and they got plenty of news, obviously, but that's not really our audience. So our focus was on the things that got through and the just sheer volume of funding that's now available in the environmental realm. You know, we hit on a couple bills that made their way through. And then there's just sort of the assortment of different water quality projects and interesting things kind of going on around the state. I think this edition, in addition to the Marco content, really did a good job kind of being meaty in terms of the type of news that we were able to get in. Just highlighting different things going on around the state, which is always what we're focused on doing.
Yeah, and before we leave kind of like the budget portion of that, you know, Ryan and I, even you, do, you know, a fair amount of the kind of work that has to do with these, you know, the budget appropriations, water projects. And Ryan, I know that you and I have talked about this probably at the end of session, but talk about, I mean, the best you can. I mean, there's a lot of speculation in terms of why things get vetoed. It's a bit of a black box sometimes, but can you touch a little bit on what that looked like? Because it was pretty significant in terms of the total amount of water projects, right?
It was. I mean, water projects specifically, and Patrick alluded to it, had a little bit of a, you know, Game of Thrones red wedding experience to it. A vast majority of water projects ultimately were vetoed, and the reasoning, or at least the word that we got from the governor's office, is they did not want applicants who were receiving or potentially could receive grant funds from the Department of Environmental Protection to effectively double dip and get a legislative appropriation therein. Now, understand that decision making, it did place a number of people in somewhat of an awkward position, because they may have planned to go after both a legislative appropriation and a DEP grant. Mm-hmm. Because as we know, due to supply chain issues, inflation, a lot of these projects have really multiplied 3x, 5x over their initial planning and design type of phase. So I think a lot of people right now are left scrambling, quite frankly, a little bit. But it'll be interesting to see, because to give the governor's office and the legislature credit, they have increased significantly the amount of dollars that are available from a grant perspective. But I think you're going to see the department now, you know, with a bigger sort of universe to fund. Yeah. And the question becomes, does the increased funding they've received from the legislature approved by the governor fit the need for the hundreds of projects that are going to come, whether it's stormwater, wastewater, et cetera?
For someone like you who understands that both those things exist at the same time, meaning the Water Quality Improvement Grant or Springs Protection or Alternate Water Supply, and then you have the appropriations process. A lot of people, I think, they only thought that the appropriations process existed. But at this point, I think because of that, they extended the deadline, I think, till we're going to be in the middle of summer school, July 15th. is the new deadline, and they extended it because of the veto. And so I think it's going to be a huge amount of weight on DEP in terms of sifting through all that in a relatively short period of time, because I think they wanted to act fairly quickly, didn't they?
They did, and I agree with you. I think in my conversations with the department post-veto period, you know, post-July 1 fiscal year start, they're going to have some very difficult decisions to make, and their ranking of projects that was previous to, you know, June 28th or whenever the governor officially signed the budget, it probably changed a decent amount. So I would think, and I know that the department is currently looking at ranking and prioritizing those type of projects, whether they're, you know, look more towards regionally beneficial projects or larger projects that may be 90% complete, and this state funding would actually put a project to completion. That's the question. My gut tells me that, yeah, they're going to start to, you know, rank higher those projects where the last amount of funding is brought through this grant cycle, and then the applicant won't come back again in 2025, just to sort of check the box, if you will.
Yeah. And Jeff, there's one other item that didn't make the paper at all, but it kind of dovetails a little bit, I think, with what Ryan is talking about here because of the financial impact. And I think it bears talking about regardless. And that's the ratification, the new updated statewide stormwater rule. Can you give, and we've talked about this, we've had articles, I think, in the past about it, but not since ratification, obviously, which happened in, you know, the end of June as well. Would you mind giving like a quick review of that process that got us to ratification, and then maybe what people should expect in the coming year to 18 months?
Sure. I haven't ripped all the hair out of my head yet, so might as well just continue to torture me with this topic. No, I'm just kidding. It got signed on June 28th. It is a big deal. The last time we had a stormwater rulemaking of this significance, you know, maybe when ERP came online.
Right.
You know, 1995. So this is a really big deal. Significant changes in the standards of what is required in stormwater treatment. That's going to impact every kind of development all around the state. The good news here is there is a lot of runway built into the new rule. The legislature actually extended the runway by 6 months. So we have 18 months now before the new standards kick in. That gives everybody a chance to catch their breaths and kind of read the rule now that it's been passed. And the department has already started its webinar, its training sessions. It had its first training session yesterday. It was you know, 25 minutes of presentation on the new rule and an hour and a half of questions. I think we're going to have a lot more of that. It's got another training session scheduled for the week after next, I think on the 23rd. I expect those are going to continue until really people get a better understanding of what's in there. There's a lot to unpack. So, you know, just the highlights of it are immediately effective are some provisions related to estimating the costs of future operations and maintenance. That's a requirement of new applications now. You know, anything submitted as of this moment are going to require submittal of estimated future costs of operation and maintenance. And the inspection requirements of new stormwater facilities are going to be subject to, you know, to immediate effectiveness. There are a few other provisions that are effective immediately. But the main parts of it, the new requirements, are delayed for 18 months.
So, Patrick, what I heard in that is Jeff volunteered to write a stormwater ratification article for March, April.
I heard that as well. Okay. Thank you. Yeah. Now the world knows.
It's gonna be great, by the way, your article. But I would ask you, when you talked about catching your breath, so the, you know, 12, 18 months to catch your breath, what are folks out there, you know, because you work with a lot of those folks on a daily basis. What is it they need to be doing? What are they doing right now in terms of sorting through that, absent the opaque nature of some of the parts of that process moving forward?
Well, what people need to be doing is reading the rule now, getting a good understanding of how it's going to work now. But what will almost certainly happen is 16 months from now, people will pick up the rule with 2 months left and think about it for the first time. No, I think seriously, the main thing is people need to educate themselves. If you're in the development business, stormwater engineering business, you need to be educating yourselves now. At least recognize that there are many provisions of the new rule that are effective now. So we need to be really students of it. The parts that are delayed are going to start to affect the design process pretty soon, because while 18 months is when the things kick in, you don't design a big master plan community, you know, the week before you submit. So some of the new requirements are going to start to matriculate into the design process pretty soon. So it's an education mode is where everybody needs to be.
Shameless plug to hire Gray Robinson, Adams and Reese, or Anfield Consulting to help you through that.
No, that's right.
Yeah. Exactly. Yep. And so, Patrick, like you were saying, there's a wide array of articles in your glorious paper. You
know,
Our glorious paper. Yes, sir. But as we always do, we go through kind of which ones are our favorites. Because I'm talking and won't pause long enough for you to interject yourself, I'm going to go first.
So what I really liked was...
I like the article from the St. John's River Water Management District. And it's written by Danielle Fitzpatrick. And it's something that I talked to the folks over there, Brad Purcell and Mike Register, like some time ago, months ago. And they talked about the idea of doing planning regions for basin management plans. And that's where you can plan, implement, moving forward. And they broke it into four areas. And because I have old eyes now, as of yesterday, I'm going to try to read them for folks. You have Lower St. John's River, the Ocklawaha River Basin, Middle St. John's River Basin, and of course the Indian River Lagoon, Upper St. John's River Basin. I think it's a really interesting and positive step forward for the district. They do a good job anyway of doing science and this sort of thing, but I like that they've started to put these things in different areas so they can put a separate but intentional focus on dealing with those issues, especially a lot of water quality issues. Some of these things in the past have been really focused on just water quantity, and there's still plenty of that. And they've still got issues they got to deal with, especially on their northern end and western end. But the water quality issues that are there, especially with Indian River Lagoon and some of these other places, I think are really important. And I think they're doing a really good job of tackling those in a way that is coherent and makes sense for the future. And so I recommend it highly to everyone out there as you're kind of going through and thumbing. Pick that one first after you read Patrick's. All right, let's see. Patrick.
A couple of the ones that I kind of liked were not the most exciting, but Florida City's raising stormwater fees. Not that anybody wants to have stormwater fees raised in their community, but this has been an issue that we've kind of continued to follow. Just it's kind of become a trend. I don't know if it's a Florida trend or a national trend, but you know, cities, different governments who are raising fees in different areas, and trying to sort of as we chip away and we keep reporting on this, trying to figure out is that just because of inflation? Is that because of other reasons? Is it mismanagement? Is it truly just infrastructure is old and you need to update it? And how many of these, you know, government entities are receiving funding and still raising fees? So we're sort of trying to sort of be in that area and trying to figure out kind of the mystery behind some of those things, but we'll continue to report on that. And then also the Wekiva River article from Will Watts over at DOT. I just thought that was interesting because I think when most people think of DOT, they just think, you know, roadway improvement and just building highway, you know, improving upon highways. But this was a really interesting look, I thought, at the specific steps that the department did and the part of the project that was designed specifically to provide, to protect and provide balance there to the river. And so I thought that was just a neat perspective on a typical road project.
Yeah, I think there's a common thread, and I think Ryan noted it, you know, before in terms of looking at these things. You know, Jeff talked about the new stormwater rule. We've talked about St. John's and their planning. We've talked about new legislation in the past for dealing with water quality issues, and some of those things are coming to fruition. Well, I like the other one by Chrissy Malik because that deals with some of the, you know, those stormwater issues. Mm-hmm. And so I think it's really interesting how you've, you know, managed to kind of run this, you know, thread throughout the paper. So I think it's cool. All right. Mr. Littlejohn, how many articles do you wish to claim?
Well, I've got the perspective section open, and I'm appreciating that just reading the headlines of them all, you can tell that everybody is upset with the feds. Pepper's article, you know, complaining about this, you know, this reinterpretation of a 1986 rule that's now, you know, bogging down all of the beach nourishment projects in the state. I've been tracking that issue, working on that issue just a little bit on the sidelines, and it's pretty frustrating. The whole beach and shore protection industry is frustrated by that, and hopefully we'll see some resolution. But it's going to take an act of Congress because the Corps of Engineers just cannot get out of their way trying to make things less efficient. Going down to Herschel's article, I can't resist any article that starts with a Mark Twain quote. So I love the second kick of the mule. Y'all need to read that. It's funny. It makes the coverage of a bunch of federal court cases related to the Waters of the U.S. rule actually funny. So I think he did a great job. And
as only a Bayou lawyer could.
That's right.
That's right.
That's right.
And I'll just point out, just on the 12th, we updated that article online because some of the citations within that column related to White versus EPA, and the following publication, there was a court ruling, so there's a new version on our website.
Yeah, which is a pitch to pay attention to not just the website, but also the updates that come out of the specifier, because Patrick is putting new things in there all the time. We're getting new stuff as it breaks, a lot from you, Jeff, over the last months, and so it's good to see. But yeah, pay attention to that.
We're definitely going to continue to cover any WOTUS changes over, you know, coming months, and I think there are going to be more. And the same thing with 404. We're kind of bogged down right now in the judicial process on appeal, but I think there's going to be another set of hearings coming up pretty soon. I think, is it oral presentations? Mark, Ryan, I think you may be covering this, so I won't steal your thunder, but we'll continue to post updates as we hear them on any of these cases.
All right. And last but certainly not least, Ryan, what do you got, sir?
I would say, after listening to you three, the last remaining articles that are out there. Now, I think one of the most educational articles was highlighting how the wastewater industry has been helpful in terms of identifying not only public health crises like COVID, but also, you know, contaminants of emerging concern. We're now utilizing data collected from wastewater treatment systems to better identify where some of these health threats are currently, you know, problematic within the state. And it was an interesting read to me to hear from a practitioner highlighting that this is not only a well-accepted use of data, but people are relying more and more on this type of data. And you know, hopefully we don't have another pandemic anytime soon, but it was very illustrative of what is going on in that industry.
Yeah, I agree. All right, we're going to skip the usual calendar highlight segment, which is what I like to do, because there's only one event that exists. And at the moment, that is the 38th Annual Environmental Permitting Summer School. And that's going on, as you're hearing it, this week, starting tomorrow and ending on Friday, I think like midday. Jeff and Ryan, I'm just going to turn the wheel over to you two to talk about the conference itself. Maybe a few of the speaker panels you like, maybe some of the venue-related tidbits for those who may be there for the first or second time and haven't had a chance to roam about that beautiful facility. You guys take it from here.
Well, I guess I'll start since you named me first. It looks like from the registrations and top line numbers that we're going to have even a larger crowd than last year. It's really going to be a pretty enormous group. We might hit 1,400 or so. It's a number that we won't really know the final number until the walk-up registrations are done on Wednesday, but it looks like a really big crowd. The hotel is very ready for us, eager to get us back again. From changes from last year to the venue, we will have the Quinn's area was completely redone. I think they have added a beer garden. Like, we need more places to drink. But that venue will be totally open and ready to receive us. We've added some more meeting spaces for a lot of the sidebar meetings that happen down there. There's a whole floor of smallish meeting rooms that we've never really tapped into and taken advantage of in prior years. And we've gotten all of those this year. So some of our sponsors have reserved those rooms for the week. I think there'll be lots of interesting things from receptions to meetings happening around the venue. I think that'll be fun. Related to some of the panels, I think one of the ones that's definitely going to generate some fireworks, I think it's a must attend, bring your popcorn, will be the one on 404, right? We've got, you know, ongoing legal battle. The state program has been vacated by a federal judge. That's all under appeal. And in the same room, you will have the state, EPA, the Corps of Engineers, and attorneys on both sides, like in the audience, making sure that nobody gets in trouble. And so I think that's going to be, could be some fireworks in there. I know there's a tremendous amount of frustration from the development community just about the chaos that decision caused. And I think we may see, I'm sure it will be civil, but I think we'll definitely see some sporty dialogue in that panel. We got it in the big room.
Who's moderating that one, do you know?
It's Herschel Vineyard.
Is it?
Oh. The second kick of the mule guy. So I think it will be, for a lot of reasons, it's going to be entertaining.
The fear is that there's just not one word spoken during the right. entire panel, because, again, with ongoing litigation and how, you know, hesitant folks who work in government can be to converse from time to time, and I was guilty of that in my time in state government. I think Jeff's right. There will be fireworks, but it will be cordial. And my hope is that folks will actually glean a perspective, because that's all we're looking for is just give us a perspective. And obviously mm-hmm. there may be things that folks aren't willing to dive into, but it certainly is the only place where you're going to have folks on both sides of the fight involved in one panel.
I think in my mind, like the real tell is going to be the difference between how it goes this year and how it goes next year, you know, when you have an election. So
yeah, and to add, I mean, for those you mentioned, Brett, for those who are coming maybe for the first or second time, mm-hmm. you know, I feel comfortable enough saying this because I have, you know, been involved in one way, shape, or form, either as an attendee or as a speaker or as being officially sort of involved in putting on the conference. I mean, the goal of the Environmental Permitting Summer School, really, in my mind, is efficiency in a beautiful place. Mm-hmm. And efficiency comes from having all those folks and those decision makers that we've discussed, whether at the local, state, or federal level, be in one area for 72 hours where you can interact on a casual basis and actually get some work done as well.
Right.
And I mean, so since I've been in the private sector, you know, I can get almost a month's work worth of work done in those 3 days because everyone's a little bit more relaxed. They're more willing to engage and interact. And whether that's, you know, a formal meeting that's held in one of those meeting spaces that yeah. Jeff brought up, whether that's having a beer at the hotel bar, those are things that are pretty easily accomplished, and you'll find folks are always willing to have discussions, again, either formal or informal, in Marco Island. And what better place to do it than, you know, the JW Marriott?
And I think the three of us have some muscle memory for that, especially obviously you and me, Ryan. And I've had those conversations as I'm setting my own meetings in those meeting rooms that you've made available. Thank you very much. And that's, we understand, they understand that they're there to be available to folks that need them. And it is easier. It's easier for them to be in one place and do all that rather than them being in Tallahassee or some other far-flung part of the state. And everyone has to either make their way there or God forbid, they have to, you know, to travel everywhere else on the taxpayer dime. And so I think it is incredible to actually separate these things into two things, which is there are these work meetings you have in a room, and then you can just stand in the middle of a hallway and wait for someone to pass by and spend 10 minutes with somebody, whereas good luck, you know, trying to get that kind of time in real life. So I think it's really cool. You want to talk about that bar? It's the lobby bar where
you can get sushi made. You can get any kind of beer or liquor right there in the lobby bar. I've noticed, and Jeff can attest, Tuesday and Wednesday, I think, are the sort of the happening nights. By, you know, Thursday evening, there may be a little fatigue that has set in, but the true diehards are still around. But, you know, if you are meandering around and don't have an already sponsored happy hour or event, my suggestion is about 4:30 on Wednesday and Thursday to be at that lobby bar.
Or anytime at that
lobby bar. Or anytime. I mean, go to the 87 courses that we have meticulously planned over the course of the last 9 months. Offsite, though, you know, no free ads, but certainly Sale y Pepe, great restaurant. Snook Inn has been rebuilt and, you know, has been a long-standing, decades-long place for people to gather to. So they're off-site, and, you know, I don't want to get people away from the JW Marriott, but there are certainly options out there. I hope people have made their restaurant reservations.
I'm going to put in a plea for the poor, unfortunate souls that will be doing classes toward midday on Friday. If you're out there and you're at the conference, please, you know, I know you'll be tired by then, but go check them out. They're, you know, they came down, you know, they put presentation together. Somebody has to do Friday. And so if I can, I'll be sitting there watching them do their thing. And so I think you should too. What else?
Hold you to that. A shameless plug. I'm moderating an aquifer resiliency panel on Thursday. Going to be a great time. We generally are pretty off the cuff in terms of format and just have a candid conversation about current, you know, water quantity resources in the state and where do we go with 1,000 or so plus people moving per day to the state of Florida and our current water resources. That's always fun. We've got Brian Armstrong from Swift Mud, and Doug Manson is involved in that as well. Jorge Caspary. I mean, it's been a well-attended class in the past, but I'm like you, Brett. I kind of like going in and out of different panels. Certainly the 404 panels, again, I think they'd be standing room only. But there's a number of panels that just, you know, if you're not there for the entire show, it's certainly worthwhile to stop in for at least 10, 15, 20 minutes to a number of them.
Yeah, I think it used to be a little more tightly scheduled in terms of you sign up for particular classes. I remember in, you know, some of these older days. I mean, people ignore them, obviously. It's like, but rule followers like myself in the past have looked at it and said, okay, I signed up for this. Well, I can't go over here. But I think it is pretty easy for people to wander, you know, based on, you know, catching a little bit, you know, of everything, or, you know, something seems more exciting, or you're yelling from across the hall, you can go over there. And so I think that's acceptable, isn't it?
Sure. It's definitely acceptable, although we do try to, we will schedule the classes that are most likely to be attended. We schedule them more than once. So if you find yourself looking at the program and wanting to be in two places at once, do make sure that they're, at least one of those courses isn't being taught at another time, so you can get the whole thing. I would say if it's a topic that's of interest to you, plan to get in there early, get a seat, and watch the whole thing. Just doing the math on the number of courses that we offer at every time slot is 10, and the total number of attendees, if we are, you know, above that 1,200-ish number, approaching 1,400-ish, just doing the math, there will need to be some truancy or there won't be seats for everybody.
Right.
So, do plan to get to the classes that you want to be there to see the whole thing. Get there, you know, a few minutes early. If you're loitering in the halls, by the time you make your way into the classroom, you may find that there isn't a seat. And we're going to find a way to expand a little bit into other parts of the hotel next year, but it's going to require some people walking all the way over to, if you're familiar with the property, over to the spa side. There are some more conference spaces over there, but it's a good 5-10 minute walk. We've been reluctant to do that in prior years, but if the conference continues to grow, we may end up having to do that next year.
I like the idea of it taking over literally the entire place.
We're pretty close to taking over the entire hotel.
And we've pitched it.
Yeah.
Well, I'm looking forward to it. One thing on a specifier note is I believe we're handing out copies of the specifier to everyone there. So if you're not currently a subscriber, you will be by Tuesday afternoon.
That's right. By virtue of your registration to the event, you have been granted a complimentary subscription to the specifier for the rest of the year.
One final note, Ryan and I will both be recording some podcasts while we're there. Look for us at, I think it's Sea Grape something. It's on the first floor.
Yes.
I think down where they serve the big giant luncheons. Look for us, I think, at the end of the hall. We'll have some cool new signs up so you can see that. Come on by. We're going to try to do some quick hits while folks are around to get their kind of take on what they're doing, what they're seeing, how they're experiencing the conference, and maybe a topic or two. But we have some folks that are coming in. If you want to do that, be sure to let us know. Ryan and I are both open to doing those sorts of things all the time. Right, Ryan?
We are, and we had solicited some opportunities to record, which a number of folks have taken advantage of while we're down there. I think we would have some room if folks want to fly by the seat of their pants and see what comes out of their mouth when the red button comes on. We're happy to to record a spontaneous podcast. But yeah, this isn't all fun. We're going to be working while we're down there.
All right. And with that, I say be careful when you're driving down. And everyone
safe
listening,
travels.
Do the same. We'll see you down there. Patrick, you want to take us home?
Thanks for listening to the Florida Specifier podcast. If you like what you hear, please be sure to hit subscribe on whatever platform you use to listen. And don't forget to leave a 5-star rating and review. If you don't like what you hear, it is, of course, the expert and practitioner Ryan's fault. And remember, you can just subscribe to the Specifier online at floridaspecifier.com and read your environmental news and commentary the old-fashioned way. But do be sure to subscribe. It's easy, inexpensive, and offers a ton of ways to read, watch, listen, and learn at your fingertips. Your support is greatly appreciated. Production of this podcast is by Carl Sorn and David Barfield at Lonely Fox Studios, and we want to thank Bagels and Biscuits for letting us use their music for the podcast. Join us next time as we delve into the issues, policy, and people that environmental professionals and policymakers want to know about. For Jeff Littlejohn, Ryan Matthews, and apparently the charming and talented Brett Cyphers, I'm Patrick Gillespie, and we'll see you next time.